Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. And Bob Tomisch is with us again. Bob, senior lecturer, UW Extension horticulturist. It's always great to have him here. And because he knows a lot. You do. You can talk about a variety of things. And certainly, if you'd like to join in, maybe you have a question, something that's bugging you in the garden. Maybe it's a vegetable. Maybe it's a flower question. Maybe it's a tree or a lawn question. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Bob, it's great to have you back.
Hey, it's always fun to join you.
You know, the weather has been really kind of strange this year, hasn't it, so far?
We've had some interesting things result from some of the weather patterns that we have. We had some spring frost. We had real warm weather in April.
Right. It
brought plants in a lot faster, like flowering on strawberries and things. And then we had a frost.
Right.
And so in the southern half of the state was more impacted than the northern half, in that our plants were farther along, so we had strawberries that had very little production because of frost damage. Plum trees, for example, which blossoms very early. It all depends on what stage of flowering they were at. We have one at the West Madison Research Station that was just loaded with little plums. I mean, hundreds of them on there, so they kind of pollinated. Somewhere right as the petals were dropping, we must have had the frosty night, everyone fell off.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, except for I think we counted three the other night. So people observe that. I've got about 12 apple trees. I've got one variety, Wolf River. Must have been right at blossom at that time. There's not an apple on it.
Oh, man.
So we're going to have some issues or see things like that. And people often, they get into the summer and say, hey, where are those apples? Well, yeah, they're gone. The other thing is, with that real warm temperatures that we had in April, we had some of the starter greenhouses, not only in Wisconsin, but Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, that grow bedding plants for us, like tomatoes and things like that. If they did not get their greenhouse temperatures managed to at 90 or less, let's say it was all closed up and reached 99 or something like that,
right,
it stressed the plants. And we're seeing now they get those plants moved up here and were sold through primarily box stores and things like this. Cauliflower that are in the garden, they're not really growing at all. They have a little butthead that starts, and that's all that's going to happen. So I'll either start some new seed or something. We've had some reports of cabbage that are short little plants forming a head, and that head will be 50-cent piece size. The other thing is tomato plants. They blossom. They get just hardly ever grow at all. They blossom and never produce anything. So, and somebody reported yesterday or day before that they seen the similar thing with broccoli. So it was a heat stress issue. You know, and we're farther enough down the road, we're wondering why that cauliflower is not developing in our garden. So that's one thing. Then we had all this rain in the last, 14 days?
Right. Lots of rain.
And kohlrabi, which we plant fairly early, is splitting. And the first complaint I get emails from a lot of states came out of Illinois. Well, it's here too. Radishes are splitting because what happens is they were a certain size growing. The cells are fairly small. We had all that rain. Those cells that were there filled up with water and ruptured the outside.
Yeah.
So those are some things that are fairly current that are happening.
Well, I tell you, we have lots of callers online. Every line is filled. I'm wondering about tomatoes. Have you seen one of my tomato plants? I think it's like, I think it's blighty or what. The leaves on that plant are yellowing and just dying off. The others look fine. I have three different varieties, so I'm not sure.
Some varieties are more susceptible than others to diseases. We're monitoring for late blight. I haven't seen the late blight that we have it here in the state, so we're monitoring those types of things. If you have a disease issue on your tomato plants, send a sample into Brian Huddleston at the pathology lab, and you can Google University of Wisconsin Plant Path Lab, and there's directions how to send samples in. So we're trying to be very vigilant this year because it was in the state last year.
Yeah, there was a lot of it last year.
And we had fresh market growers that had to eliminate probably an acre of plant material just because they had the disease. And so we're trying to keep on top of it this year.
Well, let's turn to the phones. Audrey in River Falls up first, so let's go there. Hi, Audrey. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
We planted three maple trees near our deck. One is a Norwegian maple, I believe they call
Norway
it.
Maple.
Norway
maple.
Yeah, which is a very satisfactory tree. It's, when it does have seeds, it's just a few. One never, the next one was a soft maple, never has any seeds. And the third one is a soft maple who has seeds and just keeps it up and keeps it up, and the deck is always a mess. Is there any way to tell if a plant, a tree, first of all, are they different sexes? At least that's a conclusion we've come to because of this two different reactions from the two trees.
Right.
Are all trees male and female, or are... is there any way to tell them apart when they're small?
No, it's first of all, not all trees are male and female. Acorns and oak trees, they're all the male and female flowers are the same plant. But maples happen to be one of those groups of plants that come in boy and girl, just like bittersweet do and a few other plants. Popples, for example, some have a lot of fluffy, some don't. Usually what they try to do commercially is graft on a male-type tree onto a rootstock. And that's how you have the seedlessness. Now, there are some plants, we always thought that they were completely male. They're not. There's always a few seeds on them, like the Norway maples exhibiting that, where it was probably a male tree, but it does do some reverting back once in a while. I have a red maple that's supposed to be of that line in my yard, and I noticed that when it's stressed, it tends to have a few seeds on it. As for the last one you have, it might be a silver maple or whatever it is. Either it was just a random tree that, and you got unlucky and got the female tree. There's no way to tell what they are, male or female, when they're very small. You have to kind of wait till they get old enough to start producing seeds.
Okay. And how many years is that? I suppose it varies something.
It varies in size, usually about 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So your only choice on that one would be remove it and try to get a cultivated variety. Those are usually along a male line, like autumn red or autumn bliss or some of those types of things.
Yep.
Okay.
That's
thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Audrey. And boy, Corrine in Cashton up next. Corrine, hi.
Hi, Larry.
What can we do for you?
I have a lemon tree that's 6 feet tall that I grew from a seed.
Okay.
And it has branches going all the way up the stem. I'm wondering if those branches need to be cut off. And also, how do I get it to blossom so I have lemons? Do I have to take it outside, or what do I do?
Well, that's why they call them a lemon tree. Part of the problem with lemons and oranges, when somebody sticks a seed in a pot as they grow, our light intensity is oftentimes not strong enough here or long enough for those fruit to develop flowers.
Oh.
So, what you can do is sometimes cheat with a little ultraviolet or cheat with light extending the day to increase the light intensity. If you have a window, place it on the south window so it gets a lot of light in January, and they might produce flowers. Another thing that I haven't tried, but I know they use with other fruit trees, is pick a scaffold branch that's probably the size of your thumb. Take a sharp knife, and you would want to do this about December. And you squeeze through the bark, and you make a ring around it. Water will still go up to that part of the plant, but as the sugars are produced in those leaves, it stays in that branch for a period of 6 weeks or so. And with high sugars, low nitrogen, it'll stimulate flower production. So you might be able to force it. I'm not quite sure on lemons when they do that, but for apple trees, we would do that around the 1st of June.
Okay.
So I don't have to get another lemon tree.
Nope.
No. No, absolutely not.
One's enough.
Yeah.
Now, do I have to cut off those extra branches, though, that are growing up the trunk?
If they're going straight up, I would. You want to keep them at about a 60-degree angle from vertical.
Okay. So get rid of the lower branches. Give them more light.
Yep.
Yep. Corrine, I was at Epcot in Orlando about a week and a half ago, and I went through... their greenhouses there and they have some lemon trees there, and they had some lemons that were 9-pounders.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'd be happy to just get a blossom.
Well, when they blossom, they're very fragrant. You'll even if you don't get a lemon, you'll enjoy the fragrance from the flowers.
Absolutely.
But do you think just getting it in the sun will help it to blossom?
Yes.
Yeah, well,
especially it's indoors.
And scoring it.
Yeah. Indoors, get it out as much light as it possibly can. A light intensity are two things that trigger flower formation.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. An email from Pat, who says, what are those green pod-like flowers, end quotes, on my butterfly weed? If they ripen, will they fall in autumn, and could I collect more seed?
Yeah, you're very lucky that you, a lot of times the butterfly plant up here does, you know, produce a few pods, not very much. Those pods, it isn't like the legume family. Those are like little bitty pea pods, and they will ripen, turn brown. One of the things you might want to watch is as they start turning brown, they will rupture open along the sutures, and then the seeds fly out. So some people will cheat and put a little, like a nylon stocking toe or something like that over a flower, so that when those pods open, they can still capture the seeds.
Sounds great. Bob in New Glarus, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a large number of hollyhocks, and this spring I started from seed some apricot double hollyhocks, which I've set out. I realize they're not going to blossom this year. But my question is on genetics, and I think I have it right, but I want to verify it. I don't want the parent apricot hollyhocks to take on other colors. My other hollyhocks are multicolored. Would it be true that just the seeds that form on the apricot hollyhocks, which may be pollinated by the various colored hollyhocks, they would be the only ones that would change color? The parent plant would remain apricot?
Well, not necessarily, because you don't know exactly where your pollen came from, and that has an impact. But my experience has been when you have those double-flowered apricot ones, when you save seeds, they tend to have that same flower structure, so they must carry enough genes, even though there's intermixing. But you may get a little variation in flower color on some of those. So one of the things you could do is you could play bumblebee, and just as the flower is opening, take pollen from one apricot flower and then put it in another one that's also open, and then throw a little bag over it so other insects don't carry other flowers in there. And you can use that little camel hair brush to do your own pollinating, and your chances would be a lot better in terms of trying to care this. I know the characteristic you want is apricot color in the double flowers.
Yeah, that's good for getting seeds that stay true to color. But what about the parent apricot plant? Will it ever vary? I don't want to destroy all my multicolored hollyhocks just to save the parent apricot ones.
Well, most of your hollyhocks are biennial. First year they grow, second year they flower, and then they usually die back. Unless you've got a very hardy one, then you might get some shoot growth from that, which might be happening in your case. So I'm guessing what you're getting are seedlings already.
Well, that could be. Some of these, though, are staying over because, for instance, I'm having snapdragons come year after year that I know are the parent plant.
Yep.
They're wintering through.
They will winter through it, but when we get a real cold winter. Last year, remember, we got that real heavy snow in early December.
Right.
I had a cabbage plant and a couple of broccoli plants that were under the snowdrift, and they flowered this spring. Usually you got to take them in and put them in a cooler to get them to flower the next year, or burying them about 3 feet down in the ground and then bring them back up in the spring. That's how they saved seeds years ago before we had the luxury of all these garden catalogs. And so with many of your biennial plants sometimes will overwinter and be a perennial. For example, glads and a lot of other things, as you get farther south in the U.S., they're perennials.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you have it.
Yep, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Bob Tomisch, our guest today, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture. He's with the College of Ag and Life Sciences and with UW Extension on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with Rachel Owens, and we'll be here with you right up until 12:30 today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation with a gardening question, I hope you do. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And another caller. Let's go to Karen in Fort Atkinson next. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm so fearful of what the answer is going to be, but I have this gorgeous Japanese willow. It's probably 7 or more years old, and it grew very big. And now I have borers in the knot of the tree in the trunk. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can save it.
The borers are there because the tree is either stressed by, you know, it could have been drought stress or something like that. And usually we see like birch trees and that are attacked by leaf miners for 2-3 years, and then they get weakened and borers come in. Yes, there's things that you can do. There are some products on the market. Go to your garden center and explain to them the problem you have. There are some systemic type of insecticides that can be applied, and you have to follow label directions to get it applied during the appropriate time of year. It'll be absorbed through the roots, and it'll go up in the trunk, and it will kill the borers, but it has to do that when they're very small. But there are products that are out there. I believe there's a Merit, M-E-R-I-T product that's available. But go to the garden center, and they'll have that on the shelf.
Okay, and when you say very small, about what size?
Right after they hatch. And that usually the hatching takes place. I'd have to look at the life cycle of the borer you have.
Yeah.
But in there, in the label, it should have some discussion there.
Okay.
And there are certain times of year when the tree will absorb that systemic insecticide better than other times of the year.
Okay.
And so in the directions, it'll explain some of that. They're trialing some of that same product for controlling emerald ash borer larvae.
Oh,
right.
They are. Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Margie in Mount Horeb, hello to you.
Hi. Hi, Bob. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I have a question. Actually, I have, as I was waiting, I had thought of another question. And by the way, a lemon tree smells wonderful. I think I want one. I have a rose bush. It's Rugosa or Rieger?
Rugosa.
Rugosa. Okay, a Rugosa rose. And the ends of the leaves are all turning brown and crinkling. Do I have a bug, or is there a fungus among us, or?
Yeah, possibly.
And how do I tell?
Okay, with that one, I'd send that sample into Brian Huddleston. And he and Phil are one floor above each other. And so if Brian said, that looks like a bug insect, and it'll get sent up. Do you have little kink, little galls formed on the branches?
No.
Okay. Because there is that type of rose is very susceptible to some type of gall, and that insect lays its egg just before the green tissue starts coming out in the spring. But I would suggest sending a sample into Brian. If it's not a disease, or if it is a disease, he'll send you information how to control it. Or if it goes up to Phil, he'll send you an email as to how to control it as well.
Okay, and how do I get a hold of Brian?
Brian, if you go to University of Wisconsin Pathology Lab, if you Google that, and then there will be sample submission.
Okay,
and
thank you.
And the address and everything. I usually tell people if they're sending samples, send them on Monday. So they don't get, left a weekend in a post office someplace, and as he refers to it as mush in a bag.
Mush in a bag, okay. And the other question I have is about my crab apple tree. The leaves are really, really small, and they're all falling off.
Ah, that's this cycling thing or this weather pattern issue, and I should mention that. Yeah, the insects and diseases are way ahead of schedule. We're figuring about 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And what you've got is apple scab that really doesn't defoliate the tree, I'm guessing, until about July.
Normally,
when it happens. We see it in town here. Your choice is there is, either you can use a fungicide to control it, and that has to happen when it first starts leafing out. There are disease-resistant crab apples in one of the extension bulletins that we have that Laura Jellis put together. She has a list of which trees are disease-resistant. We always worry about eating fruit on apple trees, and we never worry about the leaves. And I got scabby apples. I don't like the darn things. Well, the tree's in poor health because the leaves are just susceptible to diseases as well. The other thing I forgot to mention, we talked about weather patterns, fruit flies, apple fruit maggot, and our coddling moth show up around the 15th to the 20th of June. This year, I believe they're showing up around the 5th. So they are happily laying eggs in your fruit if you haven't done anything.
Oh, yeah. Everything here is at least 2 weeks early. At least 2 weeks early. It's beautiful, but it's early.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I think we planted a disease-resistant one. I think maybe it just got something or another.
It could be it was so dry that we had there in May.
Mm-hmm.
We have some leaves that were just deteriorating and falling off. Look on the tip. We had enough rain now. You should have had some new growth on there, probably 6-8 inches the last couple of weeks.
Oh,
if those
no.
leaves look healthy, then you're in good shape.
No, not no. at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
The other is the margin of the leaf browning?
Let me go out and look.
I'll just give you the history. You can go look later.
Okay.
If we have margin on the leaves burning, that's usually fertilizer, too much nutrients. And for people that fertilize their lawn about 3 weeks ago when we tell them to do so on Memorial Day weekend,
mm-hmm.
if you were just a little bit too kind, sometimes it was dry, and then with all the rain, absorbs the cells fill up very rapidly, take a lot of nutrients with them, and then we get margin burn on the leaf tissue. That will all grow, but...
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a
sounds like you better send a sample
in that area. That's our little forest.
I would send a sample to Brian. He'll help you out on that.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, good luck, Margie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, I was looking at my neighbor's flowering crab, and apple scab is already...
Oh, it's rampant, yes.
It is already there.
Normally, it starts out with we have spores. You know, the spores are coming from old leaf tissue and apple tissue down on the ground under the tree, and they start, when they get enough moisture, they blow the spores up in the air like a little cannon, and then they fly in the air till they stick to something. And that happens over, you know, based on heat units and everything else. It was happening very early this year, and it fell right in line when we had rotted moisture. So the impact or the spore inoculation is much greater than other years.
Let's turn to Myrtle in Madison next. Hi, Myrtle. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I recently had a 80-foot silver maple tree removed.
Okay.
And my daughter has about a 2-foot elm tree in a pail that she wants me to plant in my yard. What do you think about planting an elm seedling?
Well, it's just a seedling. It's not a known a name cultivar?
No, she has an elm tree in her yard.
Okay. The problem you're going to have is there are a few elm varieties out there that are fairly resistant to Dutch elm disease.
Uh-huh.
If it's a seedling, I wouldn't mess with it because within 20 years it's going to die.
Okay.
It will.
That's about as simple as I can give it. But because they don't have the disease resistance gene in that those seedlings.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it's too bad, but that is just the case. And once again, here in the last week of May, I played in a golf tournament up in Saskatchewan, and I've mentioned this on the show in the past, but it was really something to see the elms there because
the disease hasn't moved up.
The disease has not gotten there yet, and every street is lined with these towering, beautiful elms.
We did, you know, before the Dutch elm disease came through in the 70s, we did tree counts in some communities, like I think River Falls was one of those. Close to 75% of the street trees were elms. And so you can imagine you're kind of going through this canopy. What happens, the disease goes through, and then about 20 years later it'll go through again because there's always seedlings that make
it.
And usually those trees are about 6 inches in trunk diameter. I happen to be in Ohio when the first disease came through here where they were already at their 20-year cycle. Mm. And along the roadsides and fence lines, they were all starting to die in certain areas. So it's a cycle that goes through. And
The lesson from that is don't plant one species.
Oh, yeah. What we did then in the 70s, we planted ash.
Ash trees. And now we got the emerald ash
borer. Well, we have emerald ash borer, but also like the city of La Crosse.
Oh, yeah.
When they got what happened is whoever was doing the grafting, they too come in male and female trees, and everybody wanted a seedless ash, you know. So in the grafting process, we suspect that ash yellows, which is a mycoplasma or virus disease, and it kills the tree at about 30 years. Well, 70, 2000, these trees were dying, and you know, in blocks of 50. And then we did the analysis, and it was ash yellows. So that's knocking out those. Now we got emerald ash borer, and we're hoping that, and Laura Gell has put a very good list together as to a variety of other trees that we can plant.
Yeah.
And usually most of the nurseries don't carry very much variety. You have to do a little shopping to find some of these. It's a matter of educating the nurseries. If you have greater diversity, you're going to sell greater diversity in trees.
Yeah.
So,
let's turn to Jason in Menasha next. Hi, Jason.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I've got a question about watering. I have a pool in my backyard that I use a salt water system instead of chemicals. And the ratio of salt water is about 5,500 gallons of water to about 150 pounds of salt. And the salt, what it does through the pump system is it chlorinates it by passing through metal plates and then ionizes the water as it passes through, which then chlorinates the water. I'm not so much concerned about the chlorinated part of the water and using that for my garden. It's the salt in the water. Will that harm my plants? It's about 0.3% salt versus water. Probably less now than the rain that we've had.
I know. I'm not sure of the concentrations of salt, but yes, I've seen damage when people have used salt water. Not in American gardens, but sometimes they'll just flush it out on their lawn, and then you get this dead streak down the lawn going out of where it ran. And when salt gets so concentrated, it will kill plant material. That's back during the Egyptian wars and all those times. What they would do is if they attacked their adversary, and they would go out and spread salt in their farm field just so they couldn't grow any produce in the future.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to take that as is because I consider my garden to be precious and I don't want to do it to any damage. So
no.
I'm glad you drew that luxury line there between the importance of gardening and sitting in the pool.
Thanks, Jason.
Exactly. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Lots of emails. Lance wonders about tomatoes. Many of my vigorous adolescent or adult tomato plants will suddenly get a disease that causes gray withering of the leaves, not yellowing. I trim these, but it eventually claims the entire plant, though it often keeps growing at the top.
Yeah. Well, tomatoes have several diseases that are problematic. Some of the diseases are airborne, like late blight. That's why we're always concerned that it might move into the area. The others there's verticillium wilt and fusarium wilt, and usually it plugs the vascular tissue, and you have wilting starting from the top down. You might want to go to learningstore.com or also on the pathology website. There are some bulletins on tomato diseases, and you might want to try to compare what you're seeing to get an idea of how to control it. So what I tell people with tomatoes, if you have a problem last year, it's going to be with you this year. And one of the ways you can kind of reduce the infection is when you set the plants out, use a mulch like a newspaper or plastic and kind of set it. That way when rainwater hits the ground, it doesn't splash those spores up onto the plant. The other thing that you can do is remove the lower leaves for about the first foot because that's your catch basin.
Yeah.
And your chances of infection are a little bit less. But if you have it one year, it's going to be with you the next year because it's usually in your yard somewhere.
Greg in Prairie du Chien, this is again on tomatoes, wonders what's the insect that bores into the stem of the tomato plant, then channels up the stem and causes it to wilt and die, and wondering if there's any non-chemical control for it.
Yeah, I'm not, usually the insect, I'm trying to think of the insect. We have that insect on squash borer and some of the others.
Squash
what he
borer.
Might be happening is that as that tomato grows, sometimes the center part of it becomes hollow because that has to do with very early development cell tissue, which is very thin. And so you have kind of a hollowness that occurs, and it's not an insect. So unless he's actually seen the insect inside of the tomato plant, it's probably something else.
Because it's usually squash vine borer is the common one for squash, but they don't go in tomatoes.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go to Janine in Strum, Wisconsin next. Hi, Janine.
Hi. We have a giant, gorgeous maple tree that is right between my neighbor and I, and we love it very much. And it has the trunk, the main trunk is like 6, 7, whatever feet tall. And then it turns into like 5 or 6 branches, but they're more like tree trunks. They're huge. And one is dead, and we'd like to cut it down so it doesn't fall on something or someone, but we'd like to do it in a way that saves the tree. Do you have any help or suggestion how to...
I would suggest that you contact an arborist to come in. Also, keep in mind that many maple trees, 80 years is about a life.
Yeah.
And what starts happening is the reason there's multi-branches on there is because sometimes the tip gets winter killed and then it starts sending up those shoots, and it's probably a silver maple, which tends to have multi-trunks. Take out the one that's dead, and they would be able to do that, but you're going to see one after another slowly start declining, and it has to do with old age.
Yeah, it's reached, but please get a professional arborist.
That one, yeah, and they can come in and do the work for you or give you suggestions.
Yeah.
Is that real spendy to have an arborist come?
Well, they usually come and look for nothing, and then they'll, when they start doing something.
They'll give you an estimate.
And you're close enough to Eau Claire, there'd be some arborists. If there's a website, you just type in Wisconsin Arborist, and it'll list all the arborists in your area.
Oh, cool. All right. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, we've got Joe in Portage County who has 200 small tree seedlings in 3-gallon pots. Wonders if it's too late to fertilize them. He'd like to overwinter them in pots, and he would like to avoid digging 200 large holes.
We can't help him with the last one.
Can you get over here and help me with those? No, he says, can I store them in an unheated shed?
Okay. First of all, fertilizer, I would go down and look at some of the Miracle-Gro products or any of those soluble fertilizers that are out there. And you find those at the garden center. And they'll tell you how much to apply. And what it is a very dilute form of fertilizer, and it's a good way to do it. I would apply through about 1st of July. After that, those plants have to start thinking about getting ready for winter. And if you have too much fertilizer on, they don't make that step. Yes, you can store them in a couple of ways. One is just to dig in the fall, just dig down in your garden and set your pot in and cover it with soil, and it'll be pretty good because the roots are what get damaged. You can store them in a shed. First one was bury the pot. Store it in a garage where temperatures probably are in the 20s and 30s if it's not heated. But make sure that you check that plant about once a month and water it, because otherwise those roots will dry out. But, yeah, you can do it.
And Sarah has a large area of weeds she needs to smother. She says, I'm going to use the lasagna method I've heard so much about, but here's my question. Should I rototill first, or should I just start with the newspaper cardboard? I don't want to till up some hidden dormant
seeds.
She's got an area about 100 square feet, and the weeds are about 6 inches tall now. There's some poison oak in there as well.
Okay. I don't think it's poison oak. It's poison ivy, because poison oak doesn't exist here in Wisconsin. Okay. I would take the lawnmower over it and get the material down. One of the things you can do is cover it with some black plastic before, and that black plastic will shut you out the sunlight, and it'll kill most things. It takes 6 weeks. And you can lay out some black plastic, cover it with a 2x4s or, you know, something weight so it doesn't end up as a sail in your neighbor's yard. And after that knockdown, then you could come in, because it's going to kill all the seedlings, then come in with your lasagna approach, and you're going to have better luck, because right now those seedlings are well-rooted. You can mow them off, and they're going to grow right up through that hay product that you've got.
Let's turn to Craig in Pewaukee next. Hi, Craig.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm having some trouble with Norway pines on the properties that I manage around town here. It's not all of them. It's just a few. One of them I had to actually cut down. It was like 20 years old. That's about where all of them are. The needles are turning brown, like in the middle, and then the whole thing will die.
Yep. There's a sawfly that comes in that has been a problematic, and I think Phil and the entomology department will have a bulletin on sawfly. It's called the pine sawfly. The Zimmerman moth or something like that. And it usually hits stressed trees, either drought stress. And a lot of times in some of these newer homes, they have very poor topsoil. They you know, excavate it down, sold off the good topsoil, and then they put it back, put about 3 inches. Well, things do good on the top, but when they get rooted down into the other area, it doesn't carry nutrients, and they tend to stress and die. And so we've had cases like that all over Madison. I'm sure it's extending in your area as well. But as for control, there might be some, you might want to check and see if there's a systemic insecticide. Usually starts at the top of the plant and works its way down.
Yeah.
So I would check and see if there's something like that, but get that extension bulletin. Just Google in white pine or Norway pine insect problems, or something like that, and you'll find the Zimmerman pine moth and probably 2-3 others. I believe the University of Minnesota has a very good bulletin on that one.
All right.
Great, thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling, Craig. And let's turn to Diane in Menominee. Hello, Diane.
Good morning. I have two questions. One, we have a maple tree that has that black growth again, or not growth, but that fungus looks like from the leaves last year.
Yep.
It came back again this year.
Yep.
Because of the weather?
Yes. It's usually has to do with a lot of humidity and wetness, sometimes called tar spot. There's an extensible. It's cosmetic. It hits the older leaves, and as the new leaves grow, they don't have it, especially if it's getting a little drier. Nope. Okay. It just looks ugly when you first have it.
So just rake them up and get rid of them again this year.
Yep.
The other question I have is orchids. My mother has two orchids, and one has just a heavy load of blossoms all the time on it, and the new growth is wonderful. We also have another white one that has one stem is growing well, but the other one is getting brown.
Yep.
Can I just trim that off?
Yeah, if it's turning brown, trim it off. There are different types of orchids, and some produce more fruit, more flowers and easier to manage. Some of these are a single stem, and they had slowly send up a stem every once in a while, and they tend to have the white flowers. Mm-hmm. Are just really not, they do really well in the greenhouse, but once you get them into a home, they struggle.
Okay. Are there any books or?
You might want to Google, growing orchids. There's a lot of books written on that because some people, that's their whole life. Is trying to grow orchids indoors. The other thing is you might want to also look at the fertilizer application to maybe help it out, light intensity, et cetera.
And there's an Orchid Growers Guild, and they have an online website, and you could just
send them an email.
Yeah, Wisconsin Orchid Growers Guild.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And here we've got Susan, who wants to know about ants. Not in her pants, in the garden. Ants in the garden. I've read conflicting reports on the net whether or not ants can be harmful. What are your thoughts? They do not appear to be red ants.
Usually ants are, they feed on other insects. And so they're not always bad. Generally, but where they do is if they like aphids. And they'll go out and collect a few aphids and they'll move them to another plant. And then you got aphids on that plant. And what they're going to do is come back and eat aphids. It's like a, farming cows. So that's where the slight challenge is. But generally, ants are looked as somewhat beneficial in the garden.
Bob Tomich, our guest today, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our conversation, it's easy enough to do. Just give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us the email address talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Dan, who's in Dubuque, Iowa. Dan, hello to you.
Hello. I just had a question on my maple trees in the front yard. They're probably 8 or 10 years old. They're 8-inch diameter. And I was wondering if there was anything you can do to keep the roots from coming up above ground. I remember growing up on the farm, and we had maples in the yard, and the roots would come up where you'd actually get them with the lawnmower.
There's a good reason for that.
Yep, maples are that way, especially silver maples, if that's what you happen to have. Not a whole lot that you can do. Sometimes there's roots below it. And part of the reason they're growing there is you probably fertilize your lawn regularly. And so those surface roots really are watering or whatever it is. They live better than all those out in the forest area. And so that's why they tend to develop on there. Not much that you can really do. Some people will add a couple inches of soil over. And silver with maples, you can do that, and they'll reestablish. But we don't want to add too much soil at one time. Some people try to just simply remove that root that's on the surface, and there's plenty of roots below it that will still take care of your anchorage water absorption.
Yeah,
you can do that.
That's not always highly recommended because sometimes you take off more root than you should.
So you gotta be a little careful.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling, Dan. Bob in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have an open spot between two sections of privet. I'd like to put in there, for lack of a better word, an evergreen, but it's a very moist area because when it rains, that's the direction that the drainage goes, So is any danger in that, putting an evergreen in a very moist area?
Well, it can be, because some of the evergreens have more susceptibility to root rots, and the taxus or yew trees are one of those. What you might want to look, if you have the possibility of raising the soil about 4 inches right where you plant your evergreen, and that wetness won't be quite as wet there, and you can plant it on top of that mounded area.
Mound it up a little bit.
Yep.
Raise the soil.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's see, we got Julie in Greene County says, my coneflower, Echinacea sunrise, seems to be slowly wilting one stem at a time, even with all the rain. Soil's well drained. This happened last year, too. The leaves curl up. The entire stem wilts. Progresses over days, one stem at a time. About half the plant looks healthy. And the rest doesn't.
Yep. Well, it's the wet weather. They're getting watered too much. What's probably happening, and I'm saying probably, is the injury area is the root system. It's been so wet, and coneflowers tend to be more susceptible to root rot injuries than some of the other flowers. And so what's happening is the vascular tissue is, the fungus that's in the roots is slowly working up in the tissue, and I'm guessing it's slowly knocking out the plant. Not much you can do. What you might want to do is go to the raised bed suggestion I had for the last caller. And place your coneflowers. You can raise it probably as much as 4 inches. It gives a dry zone rather than standing water.
Yeah,
and sometimes
the
better will survive.
Yep.
Also, move your plants around, because if you had coneflowers there last year, your disease inoculum is there. So when replanted in the same area, the disease is just waiting for you to feed them.
Yeah.
And so that's another problem.
Trent in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Trent.
Hi. I have an heirloom tomato in a topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
And it's growing like white horns on the main stem.
Oh, yeah.
And the leaves are fine.
What did you use for
the leaves are fine, but the...
It's not roots coming off. It's actually a little horn-like growth.
Right. And the tomatoes are fine.
Yeah. What did you use for potting soil? Something out of the garden mixed with regular potting soil?
It was in a bag, so...
Oh, it should have been okay. Sometimes you get all kinds of funny hair-like growth, which are types of roots that are coming out, and you might be... But there's also a disease, and that usually attacks the root system right down, and it's kind of a white mold. And we have... It usually is in areas where they grew peas and things, and that mold will remain in the soil for 30, 40 years. And when you get the right plant in there, the spores come back out and reinfect the plant. I've got a fresh market grower that had a problem with those in a greenhouse, and we had to actually go to fumigation to knock down that disease problem. To best find out what you got, send a sample of that in to Brian, and he can do an analysis at the pathology lab.
So the plant pathology lab, UW-Madison.
Would confirm
Madison.
It, right.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right,
I'm kind of just stepping off the limb when I said it could be the white mold issue.
Yeah.
But it sounds like what he's described is what it might be.
Let's turn to Karen in Marinette next. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. My question is, I have, seems like, thousands of garter snakes all over my garden, my yard, my flower beds, everything. And I know they're beneficial, but... Oh, they give me the heebies.
Heck out of
you. And yelling at them doesn't work, and I don't want to kill them, but is there some way I can reduce their population?
Well, one of the things is you must have a fairly good place for them to spend the day where it's moist and shady.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a wooded area, and then they come out, and some find a shady spot in the garden where they will tend to, and they're in there feeding on insects, and so they're doing good things for you. But try to just look around the garden area and try to get rid of those areas that would harbor them during the day, and they're just going to move farther out.
Okay. Well, yeah. I live in the middle of a forest, so
well, there's...
I can't cut the forest down. But I was just wondering if there was just some weird trick or something.
Well, let's run over her garden. She's got good food over there.
Pretty much.
Sorry, Karen.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. I suppose you could, you could put down some diatomaceous earth or something. And
well, that doesn't impact because
it doesn't hurt
them. Scale,
I thought it might. I thought it might irritate him. I don't think it'd kill him, but it might irritate him. But
you can try. I don't know.
I
know that one works for worms and slugs and things like that because their skin tissue is very close. A snake has enough scale that they can crawl over anything.
Yeah. Frank in Arborvita. On to you. Hi, Frank.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
I have a 40-year-old Macintosh apple tree in my yard, which has done very well by us over the years. I've kept it to an overall height that I can easily pick off a 10-foot stepladder. But the problem I have, and it's due to fertilizing the lawn, I'm sure, but we keep the fertilizer outside the drip line of the apple tree, is I get a ton of vertical shoots, water shoots, and vertical branches off of the tree that keeps me kind of busy in the winter, yeah. Cutting them all back again. Now, I have considered the possibility of making a quarter-inch wide girdle around that tree in May, maybe not completely around it, maybe leave an inch or something of continuous bark, and wonder whether that technique might make less work for me. What do you think?
No, and you may kill your tree. You'd be stressing it too much. But you're right. It's watering and fertilizing the lawn, and those roots extend out way beyond the drip line, especially if you're feeding that area. You know, like one little one gets out, wow, look at this good stuff. And they really start producing a lot of roots in that zone. So about all you can do is prune like you're doing. You might want to consider getting another Macintosh apple on a semi-dwarf rootstock like Bud 9, M9, or M7, and culturing that. And you can do through pruning and training, establish a tree that's about 6-7 feet tall, and just anything that grows vertical like that, you cut it off. I've got some trees like that at the research station, trying to tell people that you can grow a tree for 30 years and still have it where you can reach every apple from the ground.
Well, this was supposedly a semi-dwarf. And
yeah, I know, but if you, unless you have the number, they have all, you know, you can have a semi-dwarf that's 75% full tree size, and they still sell it to you as semi-dwarf, and that's why I specifically named Bud 9, Mauling 9, Mauling 7 as choices.
Well, I can't tell you what that was.
Well, yep. You might.
And they probably didn't even have it on the tree, and now you almost have to beg some of the nurseries to sell you something with a specific rootstock number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but okay. That's the way to go if you can. Take care, Frank. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Mike in Rhinelander. Get up to the
Northwoods. Arborvitae's farther north than that. But.
Well, let's see here. Let's go. Now we'll get him on. Hi there, Mike.
Hi. I have an oak tree. Transplanted about 10.
Oops, hold on a second. Hold on a second here.
All
there
right.
We go. Now we're okay.
Oak tree planted, yes.
All right, I have an oak tree. It's about 12 feet tall. I transplanted about 10 years ago. And last year in the summer, about July, about 4 or 5 inches of the ends of the branches started breaking off, right at a knuckle. And I thought, well, maybe it's got something that'll stop by this year. But it's doing it again this year. Any idea what might be causing that?
It could be that it might be some oak wilt setting in.
Yeah.
It comes in two ways, either through the root system or insects carry it to the top of the tree. And sometimes you can get ahead of it by pruning back wherever that branch died of another 12 inches or so and just hacking off those. And sometimes you get ahead of the disease that you do have. So I'm kind of guessing that's what it might be. And especially if you have a few dead oaks and, you know, like some of the scrub oaks and some of the others that are common up there, if they're starting to die in a hillside, that's where the disease is coming from.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Mary in Hastings, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi.
Yeah, another, I'm pretty sure there's a silver maple. I've got a couple things on, and it's not every leaf, but on some of the branches I have leaves that have that, and I don't know if you addressed this yet, the red spores that sit on the leaf.
Yeah,
but it's not red spores. Those are, we call them nipple galls. And if you were to look very carefully inside that, there's a little insect larvae that's causing that protrusion of the leaf. It's a cosmetic thing. They're going to fall off. Usually most of those eggs are laid when those leaves are probably a quarter of an inch in new growth. And now they're getting bigger. The larvae are getting bigger and bigger, and they're going to crawl out of that branch. New leaf tissue should be nice and green. Won't have that because the egg laying happened probably in May or possibly even April.
Yeah, but it's not going to kill the tree.
No, cosmetic.
No.
Now, there's a separate one that's more of a white one, and I can't remember. Those are more embedded in the leaves?
Yep. Different insects lay at different times, and the different type of protrusions develop.
Okay, and they wouldn't, those same insects wouldn't be marring the bark, would they?
No.
No, so that's a whole different problem. Okay.
Yep.
So it's all okay. Pretty much cosmetic.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Season for cedar apple rust on junipers, what are the signs of that fungi?
Well, usually the junipers have sporulation, and this, and it's kind of like a jelly mass that hangs out from a gall that's on the red on the juniper. And those spores are then go to the apple trees, thorn apples, all the others. This year, because things are happening so early, you will even be able to see orangish little circles on the leaf tissue, which where the fungus is there. On apples, it causes deformity in the shape of the apple where the disease gets started. And you have these gnarly apples, as you might call, I call them, and that's usually cedar apple rust. The control period, any of the fungicides used for apple scab will work for cedar apple rust.
All right.
So follow those recommendations on the label.
All right, Bob Tomisch, our guest today. Bob's a senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison and UW Extension. He's our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bob Tomisch, UW Extension horticulturist. Glad to have him along, and thank you very much for listening in. Again, to join us, call us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. We'll turn to Jerry in Prairie du Chien next. Jerry, hello.
Yes. I was out weeding the north side of my house amongst the ferns yesterday and pulled out a plant, and it looked familiar. And the three-leaf pattern looked very much like a volunteer jack-in-the-pulpit that we have on the south side. So I think I just pulled a jack-in-the-pulpit out at ground level. It has green seeds in a pod-like pattern.
It's a female plant because it has seeds. They come in male and female. Did you pull out the bulb or just the stem?
No, it just broke off right at ground level.
Yeah. The bulb that's down there might send up a little more leaf growth. Probably not, but it should have enough energy to make it through to next year.
Okay. So I can toss that part, that seeded part that I did pull.
Yep.
Good. Thank you so much.
Right. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Michael in Decorah, Iowa, you are next. Hi.
Hi. Great show you guys have. I was wondering what your guest's opinion was on upside-down hanging tomato baskets.
Somebody's making a lot of money on that project. One of the reasons they grow so well is that the sun shines and heats that soil up, and tomatoes love heat. So that's why you're getting a lot of good growth off of those. You could take a 5-gallon bucket, fill it with soil, and put a cover on it and do the same thing at probably 1/3 the cost or less.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we will take some more calls here. Let's turn to Steve in Sun Prairie. Next. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I have a question about my grapes I have out here, and they're about 4 years old, so I'm starting to get a crop. Last year I had an issue with fungus on them, and so I've treated them this year. This year I looked at them, and when I was... and it looked like I was going to have a bumper crop of grapes. The clusters were forming. I had just terrific, what looked like was going to be a really good crop this year. And about a week after that, I noticed that the small grapes were falling off the clusters. And right now, I hardly have any. Now, I've looked for bugs. You know, I thought that it might have a bug problem, and I was spraying for that. But
no,
that doesn't appear to be the problem.
No. Where are you at? Okay, last year, the disease you had, was it black rot?
It was, yeah. Yeah.
One of the characteristics of black rot when it starts early in the season is it causes defoliation of the berries, and that's probably what's happening. With black rot, you have to look at your spray schedule, but start very early in the season because that disease is sometimes survives under bud scales and stuff like that. So be really on top of your spray schedule.
Uh-huh.
My experience with black rot takes about 3 years to really knock the disease out once you have it. We had a case at one of the research stations where we went all out after it. But follow the spray schedule that's on the package. Start early. and be consistent. If once a week, or if we get a half inch of rain, you got to be back out there spraying.
Yeah, it's really tough to stay on top of it this year with all the rain.
Also, you need a good spraying device. You can, if you only have one or two plants, you're using a sprayer. You got to make sure you get around the clusters and under the leaves as well.
Yeah, but that black rot from last year, that'll cause those.
Well, it started a new disease this year, and it causes defoliation.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's already in that cluster.
Yeah, my leaves look great.
Yep, they like that cluster because usually as it's developing, it's very close knit, and so the spores can kind of grow in that little wet area.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Gene in New Berlin. Your turn. Hi, Gene.
Yes, sir. My tomato plants just turned bright yellow right on top, and the leaves just died, and the rest of the plant looks beautiful.
Yep.
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 It's this wet weather. It's probably some root rot that's setting in, and if it plugs the vascular tissue, it starts dying from the top down. A few suggestions. If you do get some new tomato plants, there's still some left out there. And go to a little bit of a raised bed. Throw down some by 4 inches or so. Just build a mound and plant on top of that. Those roots will dry out a little bit faster. And then try to replant a couple of plants so you have some tomatoes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Miriam wonders if planting hostas around an oak tree will weaken the tree. Have an oak tree, and 2 years ago I planted hostas around the trunk of it. This year it doesn't have as many leaves as it had in prior years. Am I stressing the tree? Should I pull out the hostas?
Okay, it's not the hostas, it's the cultivating that you've done around the tree. You damage those roots, especially if it was a smaller tree. And so they recommend that oak trees and maples have sensitive roots. If you farther ahead, just put a bark mulch down about 3-4 inches over the roots. Don't go up next to the trunk because you don't want diseases to start there. And save your hostas for the outer edge. Once the tree gets growing again, sometimes they'll just steal all the moisture and water away, and the hostas are the ones that die.
All right. On to Therese in Green Bay. Your turn. Hi, Therese.
Hi. I have a problem. I planted a small vegetable garden Memorial Day weekend, green and yellow peppers and some Brussels sprout plants, and something is eating the leaves, and like the leaves have tiny little holes in them, look like they're being eaten away. I went and got a dust to put on them that doesn't seem to be helping. It doesn't look like the plants are really growing. I also question whether that area is mulch with cedar mulch, if that had anything to do with it.
Well, cedar mulch or black walnut mulch will cause problems. But this is on your broccoli plants that are going holes in and stuff like that?
And the green pepper plants.
Yeah.
The leaves are, like, being eaten away completely.
Yeah, Phil and I, the entomologist, we were doing some programs last week, and he said there's a lot of flea beetle still going on. Usually that's an early May type problem, and they're feeding on it. The other thing, usually your peppers are, a lot of insects don't like it because of the capsaicin in the leaf tissue, and they leave them alone. So it could be that. It could be what else? Sometimes we get June beetles that'll start, feed on for one reason or another. But the pepper should be the healthy ones. On the broccoli and some of those, I'd look on the underside of the leaf and look for that green worm. I mean, you have to look really close. And that's cabbage butterfly, and they've been around with us this year, and they're really going gangbusters. Also, there's a climbing cutworm. Again, leaves peppers alone from my experience, but it'll be attacking beans and peas and your broccoli and stuff like that. It comes out at night, and it comes up and eats on leaf tissue and then grows back. And sometimes you can even see the little hole near the base of the plant where it crawls down about 3 inches and where it's nice, cool, and wet for the day. Those are only feeding at night. Your insecticide should work. The only thing is, once that insect gets too big, it takes a lot to knock them out. So that's why we say follow directions and keep applying it every 7 to 10 days or after a half inch of rain.
All right.
Okay, well, I'll give it another shot. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Amy from Madison has a question about the trees that seem to be everywhere here in Madison. Smallish trees full of fragrant white flowers last week and the week before. They're shiny green leaves with smooth margins,
yep,
shaped like lilacs.
Yep. It's a catalpa.
Catalpas.
Or big tree, a couple of names. But and those are a little hard to find in the nurseries, but you can. They're very fragrant flowers. Fairly hardy here up in River Falls when I was up there. You get a bad winter and you're back to starting from zero. But there are some large trees there. I find them all the way to Duluth. Once they get established, if they're in a little protected area, I've seen trees that are probably 60, 70 feet tall of that variety. But that's what it is as a catalpa.
Jerry in River Falls, on to you. Hello, Jerry.
Yes, hi. I got a question. You may have already answered the call or the screener told me, but I've got about 10 years ago, my wife and I built a house, and I filled the front yard full of all kinds of spruce trees and white pine trees and some maple trees and whatnot. But behind the house, there are some rather mature pine trees. And about 4 years ago, I noticed that one of them all of a sudden started turning brown, and the next year it was gone. And then this year, a similar size large tree now has turned brown. It looks like it's going to do the same thing. But most concerning is in front, one of my white pine trees is doing exactly the same thing. And I'm just wondering what it is and what I can do about it.
Is that in one of those Norway plantings around that sand area?
I'm not sure about that. I know that because the other ones are
okay, they're a long needle pine, right?
Yes, it's a long needle pine. Okay. Yes, that's right.
Okay. The person called earlier on that, and there's a Zimmerman pine moth and a couple of three others that are, they usually start dying from the top down. There's a extension bulletin from the University of Minnesota, and it lists some of the different pine diseases. If you just go on their internet and look into their publications area, you should be able to find some information on that. And you're not completely lost. You need to really get in with a pest management program, and it'll knock out all your trees eventually.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. Great.
For the help.
University of Minnesota, and go to their website.
Go to their publications website.
Yeah.
Because we share stuff between states. You know, the trees can't tell which state the information is coming from. But they have written a very good bulletin in their forestry area on that one, and we usually refer people to that one.
Terry in Berlin, up next. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I'm really embarrassed to even ask this. I'm not a gardener, but my father-in-law brought me some evening primrose from his yard in southern Indiana and planted them by my door, and I loved them. I mean, it was cheery little, cheery big yellow flowers in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but the rest of the plant just looks like a weed, you know, and so the next year I'm watching that area, and I see these weedy things. And apparently they were, because no flowers ever came. The flowers popped up elsewhere. So how do I know whether I've got, how can I tell where the flowers are? I realize the wind's going to blow the seeds or whatever, but how do I corral them when I do find them again so that I can keep track of them?
Well, what you might want to do is take a couple of plants now with the leaf and some of the flower. And mm-hmm. also some of the leaves from the lower part of the plant. Press that between in a couple pieces of newspaper, flatten it out and throw a book on top of it, let them dry, and you'll be able to tell what they look like next spring. And
okay.
Those plants, and yeah, they spread like weeds. Sometimes the seeds scatter all over the place, and so you can decide which one you want to save or not.
So then I could, now would they normally grow a flower every year or not?
Coming from Indiana, where it's warm, and sometimes some of those primroses don't quite make the winter here.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of, but once you
get I may or may not see them again.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And are they really a primrose? Because I do have some primrose that were actually bought from a garden, and they're a little tiny, compact flower.
Yep. There are many
different. The flower doesn't look anything like these. The leaves don't look anything like them.
It's just.
Are they truly the same family?
Well, they're in the same family, but there's different types. There's some that are very low growing to the ground and some that are taller. I think there are some white primroses out there. So there's a lot of variety, and it all depends what you got.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. And we had a caller come in. Regarding that tree with the white blossoms,
yes,
with fragrant, she says she thinks it might also be, it could be a Japanese tree lilac because there are a lot of those in it.
Ah, the fringy one. Yeah, that's right. There's that one. And okay, the catalpa, the flower itself is probably 3/4 of an inch across. The Japanese tree lilac is very silky, very small little flowers. There's one other plant that flowers, and that's the black locust. And those have kind of a unique pod type growth. So it could be any one of those. But here in town, the silky lilacs, they get a probably 15 or 20 feet tall, and that's about as tall as they get. You see those planted under power lines and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So Japanese tree lilac, yep. Another one to look for. Let's go to Ellie in Superior next. Hi, Ellie.
Hi. I have a lilac question also. I have a Pocahontas lilac. I've had it for 6 or 7 years, and it's always been beautiful. This year, it's kind of like one area is okay, nice flowers. Another section has leaves with lilacs the size of an aster. In other words, really small flowers. I have one section with no leaves, little buds that look like they should have been lilacs. It doesn't look like the branches have been affected, and the leaves look okay. I have no idea what's wrong with it.
I'm guessing that you have a fungal problem.
Oh.
And what it is plugging some of those cultured lilacs that we brought in are not as disease resistant as some of the old ones we had. And so I would prune out the entire stem that looks like it's dead and dying. And sometimes it can rejuvenate itself and with some new shoots.
Mm-hmm. So just go out and trim it down a little bit, all over maybe?
Trim out the entire, there's multi stems.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a stem that's dying from the top down, I would take out the whole stem.
Take the stem. Take the
right
whole thing.
To the ground.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I shall do that now.
It all depends how bad the disease is in the plant. It might eventually kill it anyway.
Then get rid of it. Let's see. Phil here says, and by the way, Phil Pelletieri will be with us on Monday, so I should just mention that in passing. So we'll talk about insects with him on Monday.
Bring up the pine because
I will.
That's been a real problem this year.
Phil wonders, if I graft different types of pears onto the same tree, do I need a second tree for fertilization of the spring flowers?
Nope, you won't, because you've got different cultivars that allow for the pollination. In other words, if you have a Macintosh, it will not accept pollen from another Macintosh. It has to rely on some other flowering crab or anything like that. So if you have all those good grafts on that tree, you'll have plenty of pollen. Sometimes what they did is if you had a single tree, they would graft two varieties on or one branch as a pollinator. And I did have a person in a grafting class, old gentleman. He says, yep. He says, I've been doing this for years. I have 80 different varieties on this tree. And my remark was, well, how can you tell which one is which? And he unfolds out of his pocket a huge map and had every branch with the name of the cultivar on there. I said, what'd you do that? He said, I've worked in orchards my whole life, and I just enjoyed every time something new came out, crafting it on.
Oh, that's cool. Well, here's going away from grafting here to raised garden beds. We're getting Sherry from Oregon says we're getting conflicting information on whether or not to use ACQ or that Aquiline Copper Quaternary Treated Lumber, whether that's safe in a vegetable garden.
It's safe because of the vegetables aren't going to absorb that preservative. What happens, though, is some people are allergic to the preservatives. And you get kind of a red rash on your arms and that. Either you can do some protection, or some people will just go to cedar lumber as an alternative.
Cedar's a good alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. How do you get rid of wild violets from your lawn?
With lots of effort.
Yeah.
Herbicide, you can use something like Roundup material to kill them, but you have to come back a couple, three times to knock the population down. You can sometimes get rid of the vegetative part, but the roots are really tough. And there's seeds that are there, so even though you killed all the plants, pretty soon there's some new seedlings coming up. So it takes a very vigilant activity to knock them down.
Earl in Medford, on to you now. Hi, Earl.
Hi, we have some maple trees, and I was told aphids are on the leaves are kind of disappearing, and then some are turning yellowish on the other side. So I was told to spray, but my wife had put up a gourd for a bird's nest, and one of those is active, so I thought I should at least avoid that tree. But any other advice?
Well, the galls and things that are growing on the leaves are just cosmetic, as I explained to somebody earlier. That egg laying by small insects occurred way back when the leaves are probably a quarter of an inch in diameter. And they look like they're really gnarly and ugly right now. It's cosmetic. Those will fall to the ground. New leaf growth will replace that, and the tree will grow. So I wouldn't even spray.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Craig recently tested his garden soil. He used a testing kit for all, but pH is high, medium, low, and very low. The results were pH of 7, nitrogen very low, phosphorus high, potassium low. How do I adjust these levels using organic methods without disturbing what's already planted? Rather not use chemical fertilizers like Miracle-Gro.
Okay. What some people will do is if you can get compost and make what's called a compost tea where you just let the fill up a bucket with, you know, maybe that's 1/4 inch compost in it with water, and then you use that tea, as they call it, compost tea, as a fertilizer. If you go into do a Google on fertilizing organically, it'll have some other suggestions of the way to use organic materials. A lot of people will use like leaf lawn clippings and low leaf tissue, put it on top, and then work that into the soil, and that there's some nutritive value there. If you want to do a quick catch, go down and buy a $4 bale of good alfalfa hay and let that quickly compost, because there's a lot of nitrogen in that.
Yeah.
Or you can use that as a kind of a mulch layer over your garden and then work it in, and that'll improve it. But compost tea is probably your best bet for right now.
Nancy in Grafton, you're hold on a second here. Nancy in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. What do you think about taking chopped up rubber tires and putting them around trees for mulch?
It works out.
It does.
The whole idea is you want to have it thick enough that it'll keep the weeds from growing through. But it is a mulch material, like bark, but it'll last a lot longer.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. And Mark and Spooner, hello to you.
Hi. I recently bought a house last year with about a half-acre yard, and there's about 10 or 12 nice, large pin oak. Oh, it sounds weird for pin oak.
Yep, but I know what you mean, yeah.
The few trees last year died that were in the woods, and then just this year it looks like the crown of another is dying back.
Yep. What you've got is oak wilt. There's a couple of good bulletins on managing oak wilt, or just stop down and see Kevin at the Ag Research Station. He's the ag agent that's there, and he can help you a little bit. Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to spread. It's oak wilt, and it's very hard to protect it, any survival trees.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Sorry to – that's kind of a bad news.
Dead and dying report.
Yeah. When do you dig up garlic bulbs?
Okay, garlic is a plant actually, what's going to happen now in July is the tops are going to start yellowing and browning, and then people usually dig them at that time and let them dry, air dry, and then place them in storage. You can take some of the cloves off, take the largest clove, save one or two from each garlic plant, and then replant it. And this is usually done in mid to late September, gets the plant started, then put mulch over the top when the ground freezes, and they'll survive. And that's their life cycle. It's actually a two-year.
Two-year cycle.
We plant in the fall and harvest in July.
Sounds good to me. A little fresh garlic, that'd be kind of nice.
Yep.
Well, I tell you what, Bob, as always, I don't know how many calls we have. We must have answered 40 phone calls here, something like that. It's got to be close to a record. But it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. And you're coming back again.
I'm in July
and August you'll be back.
I usually have a lot of busy days, and so I sent Jim which days I'd be available, and he picked about one a month.
Okay,
through
good.
August.
Well, we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much, Bob.
Yes.
Bob Tomich is a senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture with UW-Madison and UW Extension, and he will be back, and we will do this all over again with him. It's always great to have him with us. Just to let you know, again, as I mentioned, Monday after 11, Phil Pelletieri, our UW Extension entomologist, will be along to talk with you about the wonderful and sometimes not so wonderful world of insects. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.